Hi, my name is Sinead and I am a member of the Diocese of Kerry's youth group, Youth Doc. For those that follow Gaelic football, Oisín McConville needs little introduction. Oisín was a star on the pitch, but a gambling addict off it. This was an addiction that nearly cost him his life, but he has since trained as a counsellor and shares his story to inspire others to seek help. In this podcast, Oisín talks openly about his struggles with gambling, as well as discussing how his faith helped him overcome his struggles. As a counsellor, he gives talks all over Ireland about mental health. His mantra is that you're never fully recovered, but you're always recovering. And as a trained addiction counsellor, he is now helping others to overcome their own demons.
Good evening, everybody. I would love to have been visiting Kerry today. It would have been a lovely break to get down there. I always love to get down to Kerry, but I'm speaking here from my home, and I suppose that's the new way of things. I'm going to talk now for about 20 minutes just on what a lot of people would say my favourite subject, and that is myself. But I suppose I'm going to start at the beginning. I know tonight is about starting afresh, but I think I have to put it, my life and my experiences into some sort of perspective for people in order for you to understand my story. So my story begins in 1975. I was born in a small village called South Armagh. The village I was brought up in was predominantly, it was dominated by the Troubles. I grew up in the 70s, 80s, 90s. It was dominated by the Troubles. Killings, shootings, bombings were commonplace day in, day out. It was something which was just a part of life for us. I have three kids now. I have a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 3-year-old. And it would fill me full of dread if those kids were growing up in the era that I grew up in. And thankfully they don't. But when I was growing up, I suppose if you were to ask my family what sort of kid I was, they would say that I was very, very, very uncomplicated. Because as Mary has alluded to, my family was steeped in GAA. I grew up in a household where it was commonplace for us to spend the weekends just going to championship matches. It didn't matter where they were. A lot of my early holidays I spent in Kerry. People used to go to the beach and people would go to see different sites and different things. When we went down there, we used to take in at least two or three championship games in Kerry, and also the Kerry inter-county team training. And that was the mentality that I grew up in. But as I say, the reason why I say my family would say my life was very, very uncomplicated was that the only thing I was really interested in was football. I went to school because I had to. I went to mass because I had to. And the one passion in my life and the one thing that I loved was Gaelic football. And I loved it from the very first moment I picked up a football. And I was always the little guy who was in the field kicking the balls back out from behind the goals. Didn't matter who was training. Under 10s, 12s, 14s, 16s, seniors. It didn't matter. As I say, I was always there. The football field was about 100 yards, maybe less, from where I lived. And as I say, that was the only thing I had any interest in. I have very, I suppose, shattered memories, if you like, from being very, very young, growing up in the area that I grew up in. But I do remember at 4 or 5 years of age saying to myself that I wanted to be the best Gaelic footballer I could possibly be. How was I going to achieve that? I was going to achieve that through practice. So therefore, that's exactly what I did every single day. Things changed for me a little bit at 11 years of age. I was leaving my own primary school in Cross McLean to go to a grammar school in Newry. The problem with me going to the grammar school was that I sort of had a fair idea. The only reason why they were taking me was that I could play football and play football well, even at that stage. And I was full of insecurities. And the insecurities were around if I was going to be academically good enough to go to that school and if I was going to struggle in certain subjects. And all those insecurities I had, they weren't unfounded. In fact, you know, within probably 3 or 4 weeks of being in there, I realized that I was really, really struggling. put me into PE, put me in after school football, and I was excelling. And as far as I was concerned, that was enough. And that kept me going, and that kept me in that school. But at 11 years of age, I started searching for something outside of sport and outside of school. And my life was to change forever. At 14 years of age, I walked into a bookmaker's and I had 50p each way on a horse. It was in the Grand National. So it was very acceptable for a 14-year-old lad to be in that book. And when I went in there, I loved everything about it. And I shouldn't have, because I'm sure there's lots of people on it here who've been in the bookies before, walked into the bookies. If you've walked into a modern day bookmaker, you'll realize that it's pretty plush surroundings, multiple widescreen TVs, nice comfortable seats, tea, coffee, biscuits, a very comfortable place to spend the evening or the afternoon. That wasn't the case with me. I walked into a smoke-filled room at the back of a pub. For a young lad who was interested in sport and health and fitness, it should have had no interest for me, but in fact, it sparked lots of interest. And I got a real buzz out of just being in there. Then I got a real buzz out of, I suppose, winning. Then it didn't matter whether I won or lost. It was just about putting on that bet. That was my fix. And for anybody who's on here who maybe doesn't understand gambling as an addiction, if you can imagine the very vivid images we see on television of people who are strung out in drugs on heroin in particular, and to do anything to get that next hit. That's the way I was. My hit was getting the money together, hooking, scamming, scheming, begging, borrowing, stealing, in order to get the money to have that bet. At 17 years of age, I was already deep in a chronic gambling addiction. I hid this from the people around me, and there was a couple of reasons why I hid it. I hid it because I was ashamed and I was embarrassed. I knew a lad at my age shouldn't have been doing this, but as I say, at 17 years of age, I already was in the midst of a serious gambling addiction. I couldn't arrest it. I didn't know how to arrest it. It was a lonely journey. I was lots of times, lots of false dawns where I thought, you know, I need to share this with somebody, but I was incapable of it. Gambling stripped me of a lot of things. It stripped me of... When I stopped gambling, I was financially bankrupt. I was emotionally bankrupt. And I suppose when I talk about my gambling, a lot of people, first thing they think about is, you know, your finances, you're broke and you owe money and all those sort of things. And that was true. And that was a large part. I would never shy away from that part of things. But the biggest problem for me when I ended up in treatment, in a treatment centre in Galway, was that I was trying to turn things around. And if we get on to the next topic, actually, let's go back for a second. I didn't really feel as if I had much hope. I went to Tipperary and met a nun called Sister Concilio. And when I met Sister Concilio, she was the first person to tell me I was addicted. Because believe it or not, folks, even at 30 years of age, 29, I was almost 30 at the time. And the image I had in my head of somebody who was addicted was the guy who was laying on the park bench with a bottle of wine and a brown bag around it. And I had got through my life thinking that when I looked in the mirror, I didn't see that person. When I realized that I was functioning and holding down a job and playing inter-county football, that didn't fit the bill of somebody who was in addiction. And yet, I was chronic. And yet, I woke up every day feeling the need to have a bet. I woke up, a serious event happened in my life in 1999. My father was diagnosed with cancer. He was given roughly 5 or 6 months to live. I didn't go and see my father during that time. As a football team, we were starting to become successful. We won our first Ulster title in 18 or 19 years. And as a result of that, we were playing Meath in an All-Ireland semi-final. And I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to play in the game because my father was literally on his last legs. But my father sent word out that he wanted me to go and play in the game. And I went and I played in the game. And directly after the game, my cousin came rushing in the change room. So he said, listen, don't get changed. Just get your stuff, put it in the bag. We got a guard escort from Coat Park directly to the border. The whole way up the road that day, I said to myself three things, a mantra. I had three things in my head. First thing I was going to do was tell my father I loved him. So I never told him that before. Second thing I was going to do was tell my family what was going on. And the third thing I was going to do was ask for the help that I needed. And at that stage, the help that I yearned for. And it turns out I didn't have the courage to do that. I walked into that hospital. I didn't tell my father I loved him. My father died on the Wednesday. My gambling went from the money increased, the time increased. But the final piece of the jigsaw for me and my addiction was the things I was willing to do in order to get the money to have the bet. And as I say, my father died on the Wednesday. I had no tears for my father. And when I look back at all the things that gambling took for me, that's the thing that it took the most. I had no self-respect, no self-esteem, no integrity. Relationships were breaking down all the time. Friendships, family members, the guys I played football with. I couldn't look at them in the eye because I wasn't doing the same things that they were doing away from the field because I was a slave to my addiction. But I had no tears for my father in 1989. I was incapable of them. First time I cried at my father's grave was 2006. I've been to treatment. I come out. And I started to get a handle on my emotions. I started to learn about my addiction and the things that I had stunted along the way. And I started to live a different life. I didn't just go in there and stop gambling. They didn't give me a tablet. As Mary already alluded to, I still walk on not gambling every day. Now, it's not something I think about anymore. It's not something that dominates my life. But it's something that I am very, very aware of and very conscious of. How do I stop that? How did I start afresh? Well, first of all, I went into residential treatment. I spent 13 weeks in a treatment centre in Galway. Then my sister looked after all my finances, so that was squared away. And then I started to try and make amends to the people around me that had hurt. And that is very, very difficult considering the tale of destruction that I had left behind me. I think that when I talk about starting afresh, the biggest thing that I found, and I remember listening to a guy called Tony Adams, and a lot of people on who are of a certain vintage on here will remember Tony Adams, who captained Arsenal and England. And I remember him saying one night that the greatest thing he got whenever he stopped gambling was his thoughts, his feelings, and his emotions. And the worst thing he got back whenever he got into recovery was his thoughts, his feelings, and his emotions. And I wanted those emotions back. I yearned to have those back. I didn't want to be stony-faced when my father died. I didn't want to not have that that emotion that everybody else had. All I yearned for whenever I gambled was a normal life. I was a very, very jealous young man. What was I jealous of? I was jealous of normality. I was jealous of the people who I seen who had normality in their lives. I was jealous of the people who went through their lives as I seen it in a normal way. They functioned in a normal way. They got up and they went to work. They come home from work. They were able to talk to people, able to look in the eye. I spent the most of my time in the prime of my life. If I wasn't in the bookies, or I wasn't playing football, I had my head buried under the covers in my bedroom. And the reason for that was that I wasn't able to function in the same society as everybody else. I didn't have the confidence to do that. I found gambling at 14 years of age and I buried myself in it. And I buried all those emotions and I suppressed all those emotions in my gambling. And when I found emotions, I started to realize all of the things that I had missed out on. And when people talk to me about starting afresh, I started living my life at 30 years of age. And I have learned more in the last 16 years. I have been able to love, I've been able to care, I've been able to show people a different side of me. And I was only able to do that with help. And the other thing that came into my life, when I walked into Sister Concilio's in Galway, I said to the nurse who was doing the admissions for me was, when she told me what the program was, I said I was going to struggle with one thing, and that was the religious side of things. And I remember Sister Concilio coming in one day, and she said, that the nurse, whose name was Josephine, was after telling her that I thought I'd struggle with the religious side of things. And she sat me down and she said, "Oisin, religion is for people who don't want to go to hell. Spirituality is for people who've been to hell and back." And when she said that, it triggered a whole set of different emotions, a whole set of different thoughts. And when I realized that that I needed faith in my life, when I needed a little bit of hope, that's where I was going to get it. And I got down on my knees every morning and I said a prayer. And I thanked God every night I went to bed. And that's how simple it was for me. And anything that I couldn't deal with in that time, especially in those first 12 months, when for me it was really like a roller coaster ride, just holding on, holding on, holding on, to see can I stay in recovery, see can I stay away from gambling and get my life back on track. Sometimes stuff was very overwhelming for me and I felt as if I couldn't deal with it. So what did I do? I turned it over to God. I passed it on to God. I wasn't asked this evening to come on and talk about my faith or how religion had played a part, but it did. It played a crucial part. And I always talk about my recovery in a couple of different aspects. As I say, the finances are a very real thing. Very, very real thing. And that was one side of it. The second side of it was my emotions. And the third side of it was my faith. And whenever Sister Concilio talked to me about religion, whenever she talked to me about how I was going to live my life, so in order for me to start afresh, lots of things had to change in my life. Lots of things. So the people I hung around with, the things I was doing, places I was hanging out with, the friends I had, all those sort of things, they all had to change. And as they changed, my mentality changed. But one thing that didn't change was that there was things in my life, like there is in everybody's life, every single day, that I wasn't that comfortable with dealing with at that time. And I was able to pass them on because I had my faith. I was able to pass them on to God. I know that eventually a lot of those things I was going to have to deal with. But for then, I was parking it. And I was living in the day and in the moment. And I suppose if there's any message that I, would leave with you guys is that if there's certain things, if life becomes a thing that you can't deal with, chop it up into little pieces and deal with it one piece at a time.
I hope that you enjoyed this podcast. Oisin really opened my eyes to the hidden problem that is gambling. His story really does give hope to those who are struggling with addiction that there is light at the end of the tunnel if you ask for help. People like Sister Concilio and the service of Cuan Mhéara really helped him turn his life around. It was there that he found his faith, which helped put him on the road to recovery. Please keep an eye out for other podcasts being shared during the week. These podcasts will include talks by Kate Lissy, Father Sean McDonough, and Miriam Karen Puzzy. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed.